Do you like to be the first? Name of your sex tape? Well, if you like to be the first to listen to podcasts, you might want to check out our Patreon, because now we're offering a brand new membership tier called Name of Your Sex Tape. I couldn't help it, guys. I'm sorry. For £5 a month, you'll get an ad-free version of our weekly episode on a Tuesday, a full day earlier than its usual release. So you can be the very first to talk about how funny our guest was, how quickly you cracked the case, or how badly I answered a question. Plus, you'll get all the benefits of our regular tier, including our live Zoom records, a special shout out on the podcast, and if you really like to hear us talk, we've got an entire back catalog of extra content. Check it out on patreon.com/drunkwomensolvingcrime.
Name of your sex tape. Name of your sex tape.
Name of your sex tape.
Fancy coming along to see Drunk Women Solving Crime live?
Ooh, yes, please.
Why not join us for our monthly London residency at the marvellous Museum of Comedy? We've got monthly shows through to June.
Plus, every show is a double header, so you get to see us record not one, but two episodes with two fantastic guests.
You can find tickets on our website, drunkwomensolvingcrime.com.
Shows are selling out fast, so be quick.
Noice.
Noice.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
In light of the announcement of a second lockdown, Drunk Women Solving Crime Live on the 2nd of December at the Clapham Grand will now be postponed till later in December 2020. The new date will be announced imminently, so please keep watching the Drunk Women social media accounts and the Clapham Grand website for updates. And of course, we'll let you know on one of our upcoming episodes as soon as we can announce that date. Thank you so much for your patience, and Katie, Hannah and Taylor look forward to seeing you very soon. Until then, please enjoy this episode of Drunk Women Solving Crime.
Drunk Women Solving Crime.
Drunk Women.
Drunk Women Solving Crime.
Drunk Women.
Now it's time for Drunk Women Solving Crime.
This is Drunk Women Solving Crime. My name's Taylor Glenn, and I'm a writer and comedian. I'm joined by screenwriter Hannah George.
Hello.
As well as author and comedian Katie Wilkins.
Hello.
This is where beer meets breaking and entering, Prosecco meets perjury, and vodka meets vandalism. It's a true crime podcast with a twist of lime. Coming up on Drunk Women Solving Crime...
I'm a tit man myself, rather than a bushman.
I'm a bushman.
You took us to Australia and back to tell us about a bestiality.
Let him pull your pigtails, Taylor. He might marry you. And that's my stuff.
I don't understand how you guys have managed to wangle being drunk as a living. I don't think anyone's managed that since, like, Oliver Reed.
Now it's time for Drunk Women Solving Crime.
Hello, and welcome to the first Drunk Women Men's Month episode of 2020.
Yay!
I am thrilled to introduce our guest. It's the comedian and presenter, Nish Kumar.
Yay! Hello, everyone.
Hello, Nish.
At last, some jobs for men. When? When will society allow us to have some jobs on podcasts?
You're doing God's work.
It's never too early to talk about a good cause, so thank you for that lead-in. Do you know what occurred to me, though, just today, because I was looking at when this is going to come out, and it's coming out the day after the U.S. election, and I was like,
fucking way.
Yeah, so we're either going to be, like, breathing a sigh of relief, or, like, curling up with our cyanide pills.
Jesus Christ. Okay, they're either going to need this episode more than ever, or it's either way it's irrelevant, right?
Well,
that's kind of the way we roll.
It's either like congratulations to everyone, or welcome to the start of the second civil war.
Yes.
Yeah. Right. Well, I can think of no better way to kick it off than ask what we always ask, which
now
is
for some comedy.
Now for some light relief. Nish, have you ever been the victim of a crime?
I have been the victim of definitely one attempted crime.
Ooh. Okay.
When I was about either 12 or 13 years old, I was in my house on my own and my mum had gone to pick my brother up from his friend's house and a man tried to break into our house.
Oh, God.
Yeah, when I was upstairs. And I basically, because I'm not really, like, because when I was a kid, I was exactly the sort of kid you think I was. So I was just like, sat in my room thinking about The Simpsons. And I had sort of lost track of whether my mother was still in the house or not. And I just heard this like sort of crashing noise from downstairs. Oh. And so I just assumed it was my mum. So I shouted down, "Mum," and I looked down the stairs to see someone who was not my mum, because I don't want to give too much away about respect my mother's privacy. But the man was very much a white man. And that is two things my mother is very much not. In the hallway of our house.
Oh my God. And
he heard me shout for my mum, like just like not really shouting for my mum. I was literally just going like, "Mum, are you still here?" And then he froze and then panicked and dashed. So basically, the potted history of this is I averted a crime. I intimidated a mugger. The real story is that I thought my mum was in, realised there was a mugger there, sat on the stairs and cried for 20 minutes and then had to be calmed down by my neighbour. But the official party line is I intimidated a mugger.
Absolutely. Oh, does anybody else want to hug Lil Nish?
I love that you intimidated him.
Yeah.
By literally just going, "Mum!"
Yeah.
Like calling for your mum.
He was right too, because if my mum had been in the house, she'd have beaten the shit out of him.
Like he was correct to be afraid of her.
Wow.
They used a crowbar to break the back window.
Wow, and, boy.
It was just one of those things where, like, the police were there and they were like, "Yeah, we're probably not going to catch this guy." And you're like, "Okay, thank you.
Can you at least just pretend you're going to do some, like, CSI cold case stuff on this?"
Yeah. Instead of just being like, they should at least have a fake line for children.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, exactly. Like,
it's like they come in and they're like, "Santa's not real and we don't solve crimes."
Yeah.
"You little twat. Man up next time. Yelling for your mom.
You're on your own."
I do wonder, we unearth a lot of life hacks on this podcast. It's just sort of a side benefit of drinking for a living. I wonder if yelling "mom" could be used in a variety of situations, because I feel like it would really unnerve somebody if you used it.
Do you think it was maybe triggering for him? Maybe his mom, he didn't have a great relationship.
He might have had a difficult relationship. Yeah.
But also, it reminds people that other people are people that have families and stuff. You're not like a faceless, you know, number. You're like, "Oh no, that guy's got to tell his mom. He's got a dad. He's got, you know."
Yeah, maybe he's like, it was an excess of empathy that caused him to flee.
Excessive empathy.
It might have done. But it's like that thing that people say that if you're being attacked, you should shout. Is this the thing? This is a piece of advice. You should shout "fire."
Yeah.
Because otherwise people won't engage with it. But this is like the reverse of that. You're actually saying
appeal to the good nature of the criminal community.
I think what I'd do maybe is like, if someone was in my house, I'd just shout like, "Dwayne the Rock Johnson." So he was about to arrive. And then they'll be like, "Oh, fucking, oh, I'm not taking on The Rock." And then
I'm intrigued by every level of that, because so you are anticipating that Dwayne The Rock Johnson would be in your house, and yet your relationship with him is such that you still refer to him as Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
He insists. Like,
it's how he gets off.
Hannah lives with two Dwayne Johnsons, so she's got a...
Yeah, one's like an account
friendship.
Not the pebble. I want The Rock. Oh my God, that's amazing.
Oh, the pebble.
You know, anyone that's desperate enough that they're breaking into a house not to have an excess of empathy as But they probably thought the house was empty, and that would be unsettling enough. You know, they're not there to terrorize people or carry out an assault.
Yeah, they want to quit in and out or whatever.
Yeah. So
it's a very vivid memory for me. But I definitely remember the policeman just being like, "Look, they don't want They don't want anyone in the house. Yeah. I think also when you're like 13 and you watched as many like ill-advised, like violent movies as I have, I just sort of always anticipated that they, you know, at any given moment, any of us is a heartbeat away from a panic room style situation.
The escalation.
Oh, of course. Yeah. Oh, that's, it's hugely traumatic. So it's so healthy that we're laughing about it.
And Nish, just so you know, we're laughing at you and not.
Yeah, great. I think that is the correct.
Poor old Katie.
The empathy is pouring out of her.
Katie's the nicest. She can't even. She's like, no, too far, guys. Well, Nish, we always ask if you could have this perpetrator in front of you now in a non-threatening situation. He's not here to harm you. He's not going to talk back or anything. What would you say to him?
I'd say to him, joke's on you. My mum wasn't there and I was really weak. Suck to be you, rubber.
I love that it's trash talk. My mum wasn't even there.
That is excellent.
What's great is it almost felt like you had been writing that for several years.
I've really stored up some animosity towards this man.
So my mom wasn't even there. Shouted that.
We also didn't even have anything good. Like, like if the guy was planning on like robbing an out-of-date Super Nintendo, then you know, like my house in the like late 90s, early noughties was not full of stuff to steal.
Oh boy. Oh boy. Very good. Very good. Thank you so much for sharing that. I still want to hug that little kid. It's just this natural instinct.
Poor guy. All he wanted to do was just live his life and think about The Simpsons all day. No. That's all he wanted to do. All he wanted to do.
It's the one thing The Simpsons never prepared you for.
Now it's time for drunk women solving crime.
Guys, it's time to veer into the true crime case that I have prepared. Are we ready?
Mm-hmm. Very.
We look ready. We're drinking at 5 p.m. We couldn't be readier.
Yeah. I don't understand how you guys are doing this.
No one does.
I don't understand how you guys have managed to wangle being drunk as a living. I don't think anyone's managed that since like Oliver Reed. Like just be professionally hammered.
Just have everyone pretend to accept it.
It doesn't come with a pension though, because we're not gonna live that long.
Yeah. Also, we all take Enhance My Appearance on Zoom, so we look much worse than this.
I didn't do that.
Well, Katie, you don't need to. We don't need to talk about that. Jesus Christ.
That you can press to enhance your appearance?
Oh, yeah.
And how far can this enhancement go? Because I'm carrying a bit of lockdown girth around the old midriff.
It doesn't change your girth, I'm afraid. I've tried. But, guys, here we go. This is the case of Louis de Rougemont. Ooh. Louis was a wealthy Parisian-born explorer who spent over 30 years living with an indigenous tribe and later writing about his experiences in a publication. So first question, what time period is this?
Did you say he was an explorer?
Mm-hmm.
When you say explorer, how, I don't wish to be indecorous, white are we interpreting that word as?
We will very much get to that.
Would the word be colonist if it wasn't explorer?
I think another way to ask the question is, which era smacks of white guys infiltrating an indigenous population?
I mean, that could be any year between 1500 and about 1980. I'm going to say like early, like maybe 1600s.
Okay. Very good guess.
I'm going to go 1919.
Ooh. They're going to say 1990. Yeah. Like, all right. The never aired Louis Theroux special just didn't play very well to the test audience. Okay, good. 1919. We got 1600. Hannah George, you want to split the difference?
Bang in the middle. Yeah. Yeah. Like 1750.
Okay. These are all good guesses because it's a depressingly wide range of possibilities. He started writing in 1898. So it was the decades preceding. Yeah.
So it was the 90s, just the wrong 90s.
Just the wrong 90s. But very much an era of, hello, I live here now. So where do you think he lived with this tribe?
Again, so many options. Like, fucking hell.
I mean, I'm only guessing, if we're assuming, I guess French, like somewhere in North Africa, like Senegal, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Ah. That's a very good guess.
I'm going to say somewhere in South Africa, like South Africa. I don't think it'll be that though.
I'm just going to say the USA.
These are all plausible answers. The answer is Australia.
Oh. Okay.
And the lucky folks were the Torres Strait Islanders. Now, in which city do you suppose this guy wound up writing about his experiences? Who would have been super hungry for these kinds of stories?
In Australia or anywhere?
Well, that's for you to decide.
I'm going to say London. The Victorians were going.
Ding, 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 ding. Spot on. He wrote in London.
Of course.
He wrote for a publication called Wide World Magazine. So context, yes, this is the height of the British Empire. So Wide World Magazine is basically hardcore porn for colonialists. That was their tagline, actually. Right in for your own wank bank. I don't even know. So they serialized his stories as The Adventures of Louis de Rougemont. And then they were later published all together as The Adventures of Louis de Rougemont, as told by himself.
Great. These titles got to be snappier, guys.
Come on, guys.
Told by himself. My favorite autobiography name is when people, I think Victoria Beckham had an autobiography called My Autobiography. Fuck's sake. What?
That is still snappier.
It's not bad. It's not bad.
It's not necessary, but it is snappier.
I'm going to say I would like people to aim somewhere between the middle of those two things. Yeah. I want something shorter, but I want something that's a bit more effort than my autobiography. Yeah.
and like only a pun if it's a really good pun.
Yes.
True. Mm. True. There's something about As Told by Himself that made me think of, they weren't as popular here, but Judy Blume books. Like, did you guys read Judy Blume?
Yeah.
I'm looking at Nish. Come on, Nish. That scared little kid, yeah, at the top of the stairs.
Judy Blume is something that I think I've sort of absorbed via cultural osmosis.
Yeah.
I think it's probably been referenced in enough American programs that I've watched.
Yeah. To be frank, Oh, sorry, Katie. Go ahead.
Oh, no, sorry. Just boasting that I've read Judy Blume.
Oh, that's cool. See, I genuinely wasn't sure. It's the only way American kids learn about sex, because parents won't tell us.
I read a sex one.
Katie going into the library. I demand the sex Judy Blume.
There's like a chapter about her getting contraceptives. Anyway, continue.
But this is how we learned. It could have almost been, are you there, God? It's me, Louis. It would have worked. Now, Louis never meant to wind up in Australia. He was actually sailing a ship called the Ada that was on an expedition. What type of expedition was this? What do you think he was after?
Ooh, treasure? I mean, it's a bit beyond treasure times, isn't it?
No, not necessarily, Hannah George. I think you're very much on to something. I keep touching my nose. I don't know who that's for. The listeners, I'm touching my nose.
Is it gold? Is that gold rush time?
Close. Katie Wilkins, any advance?
Was he trying to go to Australia for whatever he was about to nick from someone else?
He was not.
I read a thing the other day about the fact that peppercorns used to be a bit of a commodity because they were really expensive. So now whenever like peppercorns go anywhere, like all over the floor, I pick them all up, drop them, and I put them all back in the thing. And it's horrible, really. It is funny, isn't it, when you're like, oh, that was worth loads of money back in the day. I should respect it more. So I'm going to change my answer from treasure to peppercorns.
To peppercorns.
Or combine the two.
Salt was worth a lot too, but it's harder to get back into the container. But I just eat a lot of it just to honor its legacy.
What? Just a bowl full of it, like a horrible soup.
What do you mean horrible? in a pinch. You guys are all absolutely onto the right idea. It was a pearl hunting ship.
What?
I feel like hunting is kind of an overblown word for like picking up some oysters. Like, it's not spear fishing, is it?
That's somebody desperately insecure with their masculinity. Like, that is...
I was hunting.
for shiny balls. I was hunting for shiny balls.
I was hunting. Yeah. You didn't hear the first. Yeah.
No further questions. It was a hunt.
Which, by the way, you're still allowed to do now with more than six people. It's cool. Some crazy things happened on the Perlene ship, including one of his crew members getting attacked by something. What do you think he was attacked?
A giant squid.
Oh my God, Katie, it was an octopus. So I'm going to give it to you, even though that technically has six legs. I'll give it to you. Louis wrote that the great, I can't believe you got that. That's fantastic.
I've seen whatever that film was, 101
Somebody read Robinson Crusoe as a kid.
I'm a big fan of 101 Leagues Under the Sea. It's not deep enough. You're just running into snorkelers at 101
Leagues. Oh my God.
It's a real car crash, that film.
Oh my God, that's beautiful. See, I'm sweating. This is why we take the pictures early. Okay. He described octopi as loathsome monsters who would throw their tentacles over the side of the boat and attempt to drag them out to sea. Apparently, a crew member was nearly dragged under the water, but they threw hot water on the octopus to scald it.
Oh, wow.
So there you go. Now, there's a storm, and his whole crew are off diving. He's alone with his dog, Bruno. So this ship wrecks somewhere on the coast of Queensland, Australia. But he's not alone. What happens next?
Ooh. Does he get saved by these people that he then writes about?
That's a very good guess.
Did he fuck the dog?
Just immediately, as soon as there was signs there was going to be a shipwreck.
We didn't even check if he
Nish,
was.
That's in the Patreon subscribers only collection. I'll tell you about Bruno if you give me $5 a month, guys. $5.
Well, I guess there's no one around. I seem to have been shipwrecked. I guess it's me and the dog that have to reproduce to save this abandoned island.
Is that where werewolves come from?
Lovely. Hannah George, any advance on these excellent...
What was the question? Literally all I can think about is fucking dogs.
It was just, he's not alone. What happens next after the ship wrecks?
Oh, I agree with Katie that, of course, it will be these people that he then goes on to write about.
Okay. Well, you are correct.
Thank you. I am correct.
Poor old Bruno, who I'm assuming was male as well. This is very confusing. He describes his ship being attacked by extremely tall Aboriginal people who threw spears at him, but he survives. Thank goodness. He makes shelter.
Wait, he was already shipwrecked.
Yeah, but I mean, they come at him because he's just getting off of the ship and they just come in with their spears, and he lives off of the ship's rations for a while. But he has another encounter with these people, and this time it's more peaceful. Any guesses what happened on the second encounter?
Can I just say that them immediately attacking him reeks of them going, get your dick out of that dog. That's it. It absolutely reeks of them going, oh my God, that man is absolutely molesting that animal.
Yeah.
Quick, fetch the spears.
This is unacceptable to
us. We have to tell stories about this white savage. Well, when you guys talked about the saving thing, that's kind of what happens now, except it's...
He runs out of rations and wants their food.
Well, no, it's the reverse. So not all heroes wear capes. Some just wear colonial garb. He sees a catamaran drifting in from sea with four starving members of the tribe on it. And he basically gives them food and water and rum. They get to pet the dog. They basically have their lives saved by this guy. He nurses them back to health. Now, how do they in turn treat Louis?
Right, so these are different people from the... So they attacked him.
They're from the same tribe, but these guys had been out to sea. Their ship got blown offshore, and then they finally drift back in, and they're just starving in a really, really near-fatal state.
I imagine they'd be quite like, because they probably, I mean, I don't know what it was like at the time, but I imagine there wasn't many white people on this island. Was it on an island?
Or was there, though?
No, it's Queensland. So oh, it's okay. The mainland.
So it's not like they would be necessarily surprised to see him there.
Well, I'll tell you, because it's a tricky question, isn't it? They bring him back to their village because they're so grateful. And they take him in as one of their own, and they basically worship him like a god for the next 30-odd years.
The thing is, he's telling this story, so how do we even know that's what happened?
Well, Katie, I mean, it was written down.
Okay, I'm sorry. He used a pen. I take it back.
He used a pen. So, guys, during this time, he has the most incredible adventures. I mean, I have to cover 30 years very quickly, but he wrestles alligators. He rides a giant turtle. He eats grilled worms and turtle meat. He learns how to spearfish. And
wait, when you say, like, rides a giant turtle.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. How many of these animals is he fucking?
This guy's got previous.
This guy sounds like a real deviant, if you ask me.
Yeah, keep him away from the turtles.
Nish, you hold on to that, because, yes. So he learns how to hunt. He sees flying wombats.
Like actual hunting, not just collecting inanimate objects.
Yeah, he stole a woman's jewelry. hunting.
Guys, look, I can pick up a shell. Look at this. Woo!
I grabbed a necklace off Batman's mum. I'm a hunter now.
He even fights in battles against enemy tribes. You know, they are one and the same now. One of his most pivotal moments was when he thinks the tribe are about to do a cannibalism ceremony. They're basically all around a fire and they bring out this beautiful woman. And of course, train of thought, they're going to sacrifice her and we're all going to eat her because I'm a god. So he's like, no, don't kill her. But it turns out they were just giving him a wife.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yay. Yeah. That's a much better story.
So he marries this woman that night. They have a few kids who grow up healthy and strong. But eventually, Louis's longing for good old Western life kicks in and he makes his way to London. And this is where he commits a crime. So my question to you is, what is the crime?
What? Does he bring his wife with him back to London and his kids?
He does not.
Well, that's a crime.
Classic French. Absolutely. This is why I'm glad that we've left this benighted continent. So he ditches the wife and kids, comes back to London.
Ditches the wife and kids.
And immediately commits a crime.
But if he's been there for 30 years, then are his kids like 28 and should be fucking moving out?
I feel like there's already multiple crimes. Sorry, I'm talking over you. Female workplace.
Go for it.
He's committed abandonment and let's assume non-payment of child support.
Oh yeah, that's straight away. He committed that crime the second he got on the boat, right?
Yes.
Oh, so it's like he did when he got to London.
Yeah.
He failed to quarantine.
Probably was a requirement then, to be fair.
Yeah, he might have been near the Spanish flu sort of time. If he got there in 1898 and he'd been there for like 20 years, he's closing in on Spanish flu quarantine.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Did he immediately do something like a fraud or something? I don't know.
Wait. What? Oh, it's a fraud, is it?
Yes, he did, Hannah. What were you going to say, Katie?
Me? Oh, yeah. I was just like getting excited about the timeline and thinking he didn't join the First World War or something. Ooh. But
a draft dodger.
Yeah.
Rather than showing off any of my knowledge of history, I said, did he do a fraud? I'm supposed to know stuff about like crimes because we've been doing this for
Can I just pause and say, because I've lived in the UK a long time, one of my favorite things is that you say do a something. Like the first time I heard that, I was just so excited. Like do a poo and do a murder. And
like
do
to be
a...
fair, we don't normally say do a fraud.
Do a dog.
Which it should.
Stop fucking dogs, Frenchie. That's what I say to this guy. But did he get off the boat and absolutely go to town on someone's pet? Is that the crime?
Bestiality.
The crime of bestiality. Wouldn't that be a great result?
It would be great if he got off the boat was just like, back to the good old West where no one would attack you for molesting an animal.
You took us to Australia and back to tell us about a bestiality
case. Man, of all the ways I saw this going, I almost left Bruno out. I'm like, do I have to mention that he had a dog? Because I don't know what happened to the dog. And then I'm like, they won't care that he had a dog. Look at the role that Bruno has played. You guys, the crime that he commits is that he is a hoaxer and none of these events ever occurred.
Oh, why do us like that? That's so outrageous.
Absolutely. That just when I was thinking, you know what? 19th century white people, maybe I had them all wrong. This guy goes abroad, he assimilates, he integrates, he doesn't refer to himself as an expat and open a fish and chip restaurant on a fucking beach. He doesn't purloin all the jewelry and say, technically now this is mine, if you want to see it you have to pay to go to a museum in my country. He didn't do any of that shit. Turns out he's a fucking liar.
I'm very sorry that I manipulated you all.
Why on earth did he tell everyone about fucking a dog then? But like, how did he get caught?
So his name isn't even really Louis de Richemont. Here's his real story. He was born with another French name that I'm going to pronounce badly. Henri Grin. Actually, I nailed that.
Yeah,
Henri,
nailed it.
Henri Grin. So he had claimed that he was born to a wealthy businessman in or near Paris, which is an awkward lie. In or near.
Absolute red flag.
Bit of a red flag. But he was actually born in a small Swiss village. His dad wasn't a wealthy businessman, but he was a humble wagon maker. That is what the article said. But if I could make a fucking wagon, like, I wouldn't be humble. No. Why do we call them? I'd be like, look. Yeah. You could ride this. Yes. This is fucking amazing.
Look what I made with my hands.
It rolls.
Oh, I'm sorry, you're an accountant. If I attach one of your fucking pieces of paperwork to a horse, can we all ride it to the next destination?
Exactly. Now, question, as we deconstruct the truth, did he really sail a ship which crashed in Australia?
I have this theory that I've said a few times on the podcast about if you're going to lie, keep the lie as close to the truth as possible. And I think that, yeah, there's got to be certain parts of this that are real because he sounds like a bit of a douchebag. Let's be honest. He probably wrecked his own boat. Like,
the guy's a dog fucker. Yeah, sure. He'd wreck
a boat. That's what D-bag means. I get it. I've never understood that. Hannah George, that's some good thinking. Any differences?
No, just jumping on that. So he's got to cover up his failure.
Hmm. Yes, yes, okay. Yes.
He did crash on the coast of Australia, but very little of what he wrote about the pearl hunting stuff was true. Like the octopus thing definitely wasn't true.
It felt a bit weird because I've eaten calamari and it's not that big. They're saying like that it pulls them off the fucking boat. And I'm like,
that scientifically disproves that story completely. Yeah.
I don't know why people have to build such big cages for their chickens. I've eaten a nugget. You can house about 50 of them in a shoebox.
Isn't there that documentary out now on Netflix, like The Octopus Who Taught Me or something like that? Have you seen this? I haven't watched it yet, but everybody's raving about it.
It's a really clever octopus in Finding Dory.
Yeah.
It's true.
Good movie. Good movie, guys.
It's
underrated.
It's a great movie.
Really
Finding
liked it.
Dory was really underrated. I mean, sequels are hard, and I thought they nailed it.
Just to be clear, I have no children. I saw that in the cinema of my own volition.
Can I just say one better? Film. I saw that in the cinema on my birthday. It came out on my birthday.
Oh, I love it.
Wow. I didn't realise I got into a sort of dick swinging contest for sad anecdotes.
I will always win, Nish. Always. And you fucking, you scream for your mum at the... No, I'm sorry. I need to stop bullying you about this. I don't know what's wrong with me. I'm just like, oh, I remember Nish when he was 12 and had that home invasion. What a prick. Sorry, mate.
The instinct to bully me is something that I... it seemed to bring out in people. I'm not offended by it anymore.
I almost just said the best people, you just want to bully them, which is, it's not what I meant.
I mean, that would actually make me feel a lot better.
Katie, those people really admired you.
I think they were just jealous of my, like, giant glasses.
God, that's the general equivalent of, like, he teases you because he has a crush on you. Just let him molest you. He loves you. Let him pull your pigtails, Taylor. He might marry you. Okay. That's my stuff.
Drunk women solving crime.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
So he does wreck the ship, but as you said, it's probably just because he was shit at sailing. He never encounters any indigenous people. So this is all contrived.
So how does he get back from Australia?
Well, we'll get to that. But the only source of information he had to riff off was he stole a bushman's diary. So he had a little bit of information about different parts of Australia. So, haven't you seen Crocodile?
It's somebody that loves the ladies. Naturel.
It's not, is it, Taylor? Tell us. I'm a tit man myself. I'm a bushman.
I'm a bushman.
Don't even think about shaving that.
I mean, I think it's literally just somebody who, like, explores the outback, right? A bushman, right?
Is it a guy who, like, was like crocodile, like you said, Crocodile Dundee-ing it? He lives in the outback. He lives out, right? Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I think that was it. I got the sense it was another white guy who had gone a little bit further inland, and he's like, he knows things that I can use. That sort of thing. Now,
also, can I just say that I love that this guy keeps a diary? I know he's not putting his emotions in it, but I'd love it if he was.
Guys, I just feel like I need to work on me a little bit. Also, I killed a bunch of snakes. Anyway.
I mean, sure, I know what a knife is, but come on, what am I doing out here?
Do I know what a heart is?
Snakes are what I call my bad emotions. So many of those.
Oh my God. Day 120. A crocodile looked into my soul. Oh, you guys. Now, somehow, I wrote D-bag down, but we already called him a D-bag. It's great. We're just all on the same page. Somehow this D-bag lands a woman called Eliza. Oh, by the way, all he does is he just has a job because he's like fucked. He has no ship. He has no money. So he works as a dishwasher.
In Australia. And he marries Eliza in Australia.
He marries Eliza. They get married. They have 7 kids over the period.
Do they? Or is this another fucking lie?
Also, respect.
Some of them were dogs.
Even in the 19th century, white guys failing up. Respect. Yeah. His CV is basically, I crashed a boat. Can I wash your dishes?
Absolutely.
I crashed a boat. I fucked a dog. Give us a job.
And Bruno's actually washing all the dishes. It's like cut to the kitchen. He's like, ooh.
One of his references is Bruno, and it just says a tender lover.
And it's in quotes, so it's like a cry for help.
So, do you think he was a good husband and father? What's your
Instinct. I don't think he's a good anything.
No.
Okay.
I think maybe he might be one of the guys who, I imagine he was good at making up bedtime stories. I'll give him that. yeah, maybe, I don't know, but he does then leave his children. And I was annoyed with him when I thought he'd only had a couple, but seven?
Seven.
Oh yeah, so he leaves the real children as well.
Well, this is the kicker, yeah, so.
I love the fact that even in his made up stories, like, obviously I left my wife and kids. Yeah. Like, even in his made up stories and arsehole.
Yeah. I know, right? So, yeah, he abandons them. He spends a little bit of time in New Zealand pretending to be a spiritual guru, because why not?
Fucking hell.
He makes his way back to England, and he starts writing for Wide World magazine, where he's welcomed with open arms. P.S. Guys, I went the extra mile, and I actually read a lot of the source material.
Oh, wow.
You can read this whole thing online. It is excruciating. It's like being cornered at a party by a guy on coke who's talking about his gap year. Like, it just never ends, and it's so detailed. Oh my God. And spoiler, it's really racist. Hooray. So at first his writing is really well received, but then people start to question the validity of it. What do you think people started to question? I've sprinkled little things throughout the story. What struck you is what the fuck?
Sorry, Nish is frozen on my screen.
No, I'm back. My internet just went crazy for a second.
I didn't want you to miss this, Nish, because my thinking is hovercraft. Because I think that you mentioned a hovercraft, and I was a bit like, coming from the Isle of Wight, we're one of the... Oh, catamaran, you said.
Catamaran.
I always call it catamaran, and it's not. That's like a pudding. The catamaran thing, I think that thing when he saved those people, that feels something that people would maybe question and go like...
Yeah.
Really, the people that supposedly attacked him at the beginning,
yeah,
they're suddenly just going to take him in because he supposedly helped
yeah.
these other...
I'm there's not sure plot about holes. That. You'd get told to rewrite that if that was your film script.
You would. Yeah, yeah, and yeah. How did they wash up in the exact place where they left? Like, oh, how lucky, we are starving, but we're home. That silly C. What a sense of humor she has. Yeah, absolutely. Did anything else strike you as...
Oh, I also think the whole, hey, here's a wife ceremony. It all feels a bit, that bit in The Return of the Jedi. It all feels a little bit like that sort of section of it. Feels slightly made up.
Yeah. I'm sure people believed like, oh, yes, of course, cannibalism because they're savages. But then there's a little bit of like, the twist is I'm just sexy.
Yeah, yeah.
She wants my ass. Yeah. Yeah, there's loads of stuff that didn't add up. Like the time frame didn't make sense because the shipwreck was documented, but it was like 15 years later that he comes back and he's saying 30 years. So that doesn't sort of add up. He also said he wrestled alligators and he should have said crocodiles. So people are like, wait a minute. Also, flying wombats, like anybody who's seen a wombat knows, like, those things don't get airborne. They're huge. They're giant, fuzzy, adorable lumps.
Oh, I was thinking of flying squirrels then, because I have seen, like, something, but I didn't know that.
Also, I'll be honest with you, there's no animal that if somebody said it exists in Australia, I would rule out. Like, it's not just like there are, like, laser sharks in Australia. I'd be like, yeah, yeah, sure, yeah, 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 yeah. Yeah, the sharks have evolved lasers. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I know, 100%, 100%. The other thing is they're like, you can't ride a giant turtle. So just...
Oh, yes.
And this general sense, like he was apparently this really arrogant, like skinny, very slight guy. And they're kind of like, worshipped as a god, huh? You know, even the Victorians are like, meh.
This is fantastic. It's like a Coen Brothers movie. Like, it's absolutely great.
I'm so glad you're enjoying it. It was a lot of fun to research, but man, the original text, fuck you. Anyway,
wow.
Does he confess to these accusations? How do you think Henri responds?
Well, back in the olden timey days, you couldn't just, you know,
tweet about it.
Yeah, well, finding out the actual facts and stuff, either someone goes on a fact-finding mission,
yeah,
which maybe they do. But, you know, I imagine it was a lot easier to get away with shit. Oh. Even, like, fucking 2006, it was a lot easier to get away with shit. Like, before everything was, you know, not for me. I sound incriminating there. But, I mean, you know, just everything is documented. And
Hannah George was catfishing the shit out of everybody back in 2006. Yeah, no, you're right. You're right. It's so much harder to get credible. Yeah,
there's no way he accounts. Definitely. There's no way somebody who makes that up is immediately like, you know what? I'll hold my hands up. That book was all horseshit. Like, there's no way someone who has the idea to make up an entire weird life story is like, you know what? Fair's fair.
Busted. <Yeah. laughs>
No, he's way too invested in it at this point. So he starts giving lectures to try to establish his credibility. Yes.
Oh, wow.
You know what? I've come full circle on this guy and I like him again. I like somebody being like, what? You're saying I'm lying? Well, get ready for my TED talk, okay? Yes. Get ready for it.
It is, the audacity is kind of...
Yeah.
It's impressive.
I've come back around on him.
You'll really enjoy this because during one of the lectures, he brought in a giant turtle and wrote on it.
Oh, fucking hell.
And he's like, see?
We can do it. Baller. Oh, I love it.
Jesus Christ. Look, we're not in the sea. Look what I can do.
But people are furious and they're determined to show that he's lying because this is, for the time, a very credible, this is the National Geographic of its time. Someone is finally able to call him out as a hoaxer once and for all. Any guesses who that person might have been?
Are they a famous person or just like a policeman or something?
They're not famous.
It's going to be a botanist or someone that knows about crocodiles.
Sherlock Holmes.
See, that is awesome. And I was going to say Darwin.
I'm going to say Queen Victoria.
Split the difference. That's what we've done between those two.
I love all these answers. The answer, the truth is pretty awesome. It was Eliza.
Oh, yes.
Oh, nice.
She sees a photo of him in a paper in Australia. She's there with all these kids, sees his picture, and there's a story about, is this guy for real? And she's like, fuck this prick.
Oh, amazing. Wow. That's amazing.
That's great.
She put herself back in the narrative. I'm listening to the Hamilton soundtrack.
I fucking love Hamilton.
So,
literally Eliza's journey.
Right.
To round out this story, he's fired from his job, but no charges are filed. They just decide it's not worth it. What does he do next? And I'll give you a clue. This has happened a surprising amount on this podcast. It's like where the story goes. What does he do with himself?
He successfully runs to be president of America.
Oh, fucking hell.
Which, of course, we all know today is... Amanda, just insert something there.
Yeah, to the people listening, commiserations or hooray.
Well, one thing but it's often the women... that they'll be criminals and they'll get a little bit of notoriety and then they'll become like stars of the stage and screen. So I don't know whether he
does he do like a tour?
A one-man show.
He does every show.
Fucking hell. He's a disgraced comedian.
Never underestimate the capacity of a man to turn something into an Edinburgh show. Never underestimate it. If there's one thing I've learned in 13 or whatever it is years at the Edinburgh Fringe, it's that any old shit ends up being an Edinburgh show. And I speak from experience both as an audience member and indeed performer.
Yep, you guys nailed it. What do you think he called his one-man show?
Pathos.
My Listen. Autobiography.
Listen, when you're wrong, you're wrong.
Or would he have been like a total edgelord and be like, dog fucker? The show was called The Greatest Liar on Earth.
Yes!
Oh, man.
So, I mean, he's leaning into it, isn't he?
He's leaning into you, and you would go and see that fucking show, wouldn't you? You'd be this is that cunt that lied.
Yeah.
I wouldn't. I have kids. I'd just read about it. But like, if I didn't have kids, I would go and see that show.
Here's what I would have done. I'd go, okay, I'm not going to pay to see this, but I will watch it on Netflix.
Yeah, I'm not helping him.
Yeah.
So he performs it in South Africa first. So that's like his preview.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Preview season in South Africa where it's safe.
Fucking hell.
And then, honestly, like, truth stranger than fiction, he decides to do his big tour in Australia. How wow. is it received?
And so he Eliza all brings the kids on the first night and it turns into Jerry Springer.
Yeah. How do you think it's received?
I think it's received incredibly. Probably it's like you, Katie. Like, I'm listening to this being like,
what a piece. Yes, of course I would see that.
But see, I'm going to go opposite. I'm going to trust the people of Australia to be annoyed with this man that has brought shame on their country. How's that working out for me?
I think people may be quite...
Katie, I'll let you know after these messages.
Oh, okay. Look, this is a running gag that Nish isn't going to get. These guys get really annoyed with... I would say, answer their question after these messages, and there wouldn't be messages. It would just be me fucking about.
There's no messages.
And they really hate it. They keep trying to, like, let me know how much they hated me doing that.
The joke is no one sponsors us, so we just, after these messages, nothing.
What have we learned about bullying, Katie? It's just because they respect you too much.
They're so jealous.
We actually love you so, so, so much, Katie, and you need to know that.
Thank you.
Hannah?
I think people would go and see it. So I think that even if it's a kind of...
Oh, the critics hate it, but the audiences go.
Yeah, I think people will go. I think people will go and see it.
Well, yeah, he did sell tickets, but he is booed off the stage the Yay! First show and he cancels the tour.
Oh, wow.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
I trusted the people of Australia and they did the right thing.
And wow. You know what? You could trust the people of Australia in this case. So here's to Australia and here's to Eliza.
Cheers.
We solved a crime.
Drunk women solving crime.
It's time, finally, to hear from one of our listeners who has sent in a crime for us to solve. So, dear drunk women, a while back I was living in a student house with two friends. On the morning of my 21st birthday, we discovered someone had done a poo. See? Done a poo in the alleyway running between our house and our neighbors. At first, suspicion fell on the neighbors, also students, because frankly, they just seemed like the type. Then we realized they were probably the last people who would want a poo in the alleyway next to their house. We never solved the mystery. 5 years later, I was living with my best friend, different person, different house, although same neighborhood, when the second poo happened. My boyfriend had stayed over at my house while my housemate was at her boyfriend's. Things had not been going well with my boyfriend, and I broke up with him in the morning after he left. I went into the back garden to try to calm down, and I noticed a poo wrapped in kitchen roll in our garden. The only people who could have thrown it there were the neighbors, or so I thought, until I started telling the story and other people raised various possibilities. Was this somehow linked to the first poo? Did my disgruntled ex-boyfriend throw it out of the bathroom window? The problem with this theory is that the kitchen roll it was wrapped in was definitely not ours. Can you help shed some light on the mystery of the two poos? Best wishes, Sam. P.S. This is not a Fight Club scenario. I'm trusting you to not throw suspicion on me. We can't guarantee that, Sam. We have to explore all possibilities. What do you guys
think? We almost always victim blame on this podcast. Sam, have a word with your colon and have a word with yourself.
We're so feminist.
This is an awkward one for me because Katie's husband has actually accused me of shitting on their in front of their old house previously. Because I used to live behind, like almost behind Katie in your old house.
In Shepherd's Bush.
Yeah, and at one stage, Richard did accuse me of doing a huge shit on your.
You know what? I like there is. There's no way that was you.
No, there's no way it was me, and I'll tell you how I know it was me. It's because I could not trust myself to produce something solid enough to be recognised. If I had done it on your front doorstep, it would have looked like Jackson Pollock himself had unloaded.
I also like the fact that you lived behind Katie, yet you would. go to the trouble as going to the front door to do the share. It's straight into a back garden.
Not someone getting caught short, is it? I mean, it probably was someone getting caught short or someone that hates my husband. It only would hate me. It can't be aimed at me.
But I remember once I ran into a friend of mine in the like centre of London, like in Cambridge Circus. And like I always am obsessed with the idea of like how cool it would be to live in the middle of town. And I ran into this friend of mine and she, I was like, what are you doing here? She said, I live above, she lived like right on Cambridge Circus. Mm-hmm. And I said, oh, that's absolutely incredible. She was like, because I was like, it must be amazing to just be able to like get out and walk around in the middle. Like, I think people living in the middle of a city is how exciting and cool. And she was like, yeah, it is. But yesterday a man took a massive shit outside my front door. Yeah, you know what? That will happen.
Yeah, like I'll stick with Shepherd's Bush, where it only happens sometimes. When I remember what, like, sorry, I know we need to solve this crime, but I'm just suddenly remembering all the poo incidences.
There was a lot of shit around in Shepherd's Bush.
A lot of shit. This story, like, one of my jobs I had in my previous life, I had to park in a multi-story car park and walk through the stairwell to get back to my car. From this office, there was a shit on the, like a human shit, like there was no way it was a dog shit, in this stairwell landing bit. And there was like there was a very drunk man standing very near it, really laughing and like pointing it out to everyone that had to walk past him. And it was just definitely him.
Yeah.
And he was getting such a kick out of like, oh, all these, you know, ostensibly middle class people having to avoid his shit.
I can never really do observational stand-up comedy because the things that I observe people do not think are recognisable. But I remember trying to make a piece of material work where I was like, you know how it's weird how you look at a shit and you go, that's definitely human shit. And people were just too disgusted.
But it is absolutely true.
Like, you know how you see a shit and you go, that's, you did it just then, Kate. You looked at it and you're like, that's human shit.
That's one of ours.
Do you know what? And I'm somebody who comes from a family who have a very large dog. We have a dog that is just, it's ginormous. And yes, it's completely true because I see my own human shit. I don't like calling it human shit. That sounds like I've got a secret. It's my human shit. And it's there. And I do it in the sink in the kitchen like everyone. And but dog shit, you're right. Even if it's the size of a human shit, it's got a doggy thing to it, which is often like quite a lot of hair in it.
Yeah.
That's disgusting, isn't it?
Well, I mean, that can happen either species, really. But we need to...
Yeah, we need to stop reminiscing about all our fun shit times.
Do you?
I've shat on Katie's house.
Do you think that these were connected? Can we identify the perp in the story? I mean, what's going on?
She is the common denominator. I do feel like the second one could be the disgruntled boyfriend.
Yeah, it feels like we're being led down that alley, though. Like, it really does feel like they've, like, she's like, God, I've just broken up with my boyfriend. It feels like, it almost feels, I don't know, maybe you guys are the experts. It feels too obvious to be the shit, but like, you know.
I think the one thing that struck me was the fact that it was in the same town, and I think there might just be a phantom shitter. You know, like in a town, you've got somebody that does a thing and
it's like Nish and Shepherd's Bush.
Yes.
This is Phil in Sheffield.
Yes. The diarrhea man of Shepherd's Bush. Like, yeah.
Why was Nish on tour when these happened?
I think it's strange that it's wrapped up the second time, though. That feels like...
Yeah. And particularly in kitchen role as well, which is like...
Kitchen role is an odd detail.
Odd detail. Like, feels if relevant. It's the boyfriend, he'd have had to bring in that kitchen role from home.
Yeah. And also sometimes that kitchen role has little things like written on it, doesn't it? Like with so it might have just said fresh across it or something, which I quite like the idea.
Who buys Bounce? Who do you know?
Wait.
I absolutely love the idea that this guy is leaving his house being like, oh, I've got a sense she's going to break up with me.
Yeah.
Better pack my kitchen.
Yeah. But I'll show her just in case.
But if it's double ply.
but if she isn't, I'll flush it nicely down the toilet.
Like a good boyfriend.
Or maybe it was a floater, you know.
How far but did then it why float? Is,
it's in the back garden.
If it was a floater that he had to fling, why is it in his own kitchen? Unless he always does floaters, so he's just started carrying his own kitchen towel because he knows it's going to happen again.
But this is the second. How can you have two floaters unless the town is the lost city of Atlantis?
This would have made Waterworld so much better if this had been the story.
Oh my God.
Just occasionally Kevin Costner's just swimming by. Oh, Jesus.
Some not again.
Horrible turd flies past him.
Oh. Now, I don't want to do the blame the victim thing. And she specifically said this is not a Fight Club scenario, but isn't that just what Tyler Durden would say?
100%.
Mm, and really, we shouldn't be talking about it.
Yeah. Also, so she's saying it's not a Fight Club situation, which means it wasn't the result of my split personality disorder. So what she's right. implying is I did it knowingly.
Well, maybe that's the mystery that was there to solve. It was me the whole time.
Yeah.
Wowzers.
It's the deliberate nature of either passing a stool onto the kitchen roll or fishing it out.
Yeah.
Like, either way, there's so much, like, deliberate preparation has gone into that.
Do you know what? My
Sam needs to move.
I've got to tell you one more poop story from when I was 15. My friend at school, this didn't happen to me, it happened to her. Her dad, they had one bathroom in the house, and her dad was taking fucking ages in this bathroom, and she really had to shit. So she got a plastic bag and she shat into it in her own bedroom. Correct. And then she tied it up really tightly, threw it out the window into the bush underneath her window, and played Oasis and felt really cool.
Yeah, Katie, your friend. We know you were into Oasis.
Don't look back in anger.
But could it be that? Could it be a teenager whose dad was taking ages in the bathroom? No, they're all students. But it could still be someone hogging the bathroom.
As soon as anyone writes in with, like, there were students around, I'm like, well, there you go.
Yeah,
like,
it's yeah, just, yeah.
There
like,
probably
no
is
level
a...
of behavior. We literally used to have a phantom shitter in my student accommodation. But we used to refer to the phantom shitter, who was like, yeah. Now, in retrospect, you're like someone who desperately needed a change of diet. Because you're like, like, there's no way that somebody was just leaving those. Someone is like, chat, wiped, got up, and then the whatever, like, they must be like eating iron filings or some shit, but it just resurfaces.
Oh my gosh.
Oh my, I can picture that so perfectly. That
it,
was incredible
it was
imagery.
So it was so disgusting.
I know exactly what you're talking about. I want to say from my student days, not my husband. So I'm going to say from my student days.
It was him that did it outside your house. I knew it.
He was bluffing. He was trying to throw the blame onto you.
Right. You guys, I've got to wrap this up just like that shit in the alleyway. But I feel like we've sort of landed on student phantom shitter who sometimes raps, sometimes doesn't.
That's how they get their kicks.
Did you analyze? Yeah. Did she analyze the consistency of the turd?
Yeah. Did she Gillian McKeith this?
Yeah. Did she McKeith? Did she McKeith?
No.
The two turds, because we need to know, was there sort of cross referencing?
Yeah, we need forensics on this.
Yeah, we need CSI.
Sam, we need a little bit more info, and then we'll come back to
next time this happens. Get a little sample.
Yeah. crime shit investigators. Just get a little bit. Just get a little.
Could you imagine if it happened again? She was scooping some into a little jar. It's like, it's for a podcast I listen to. I'm going to send it to them.
You should listen. They're funny.
This is VSVU. Yeah. It's Very Special Victims Unit. Okay?
Yeah. What I love is I can feel how much you guys don't want to stop talking about shit, but
no,
really, it's a beautiful thing.
It's so cathartic.
It's cathartic.
Really, it's a really important topic of conversation.
Yes, indeed. But another important topic of conversation. Nish, what are you up to? Tell us what you're working on.
Well, I'm doing a show for an app called Quibi, which, and given this is going out in election week, I have no idea what has happened. So it's a twice weekly show that we make and film in the UK that is about American politics as a And okay. it's a British view on American politics. So
cool.
I have no idea what has happened this
week. Very much I've been very much enjoying it. It's awesome.
Yeah.
So for any US listeners who haven't heard of it, please listen to Hello America. It's great.
Thank you very much. Yeah, yeah. So it's so we're doing that, and we will do that until the week before Thanksgiving. So 2 weeks after the election. So I honestly, like, I have no, it's so weird talking about it now.
In
mid-September. But I'll have been up all night watching whatever has happened. And we are genuinely like prepping for either way, Civil War II. Because I think, you know, I'm happy to say this now, and I hope to be proved wrong when this is airing. But if he's lost, I just don't think he's going to go. You know, that's my sort of fear. Watch Hello America for the remaining 2 weeks of its run. And not only its run, but the run of the American experiment. And then at some stage, I'm also going to release my last two. I've recorded the audio of my last two touring shows.
Oh, cool.
And so those will be out as albums. Hopefully, they might even be out by the time that this airs.
Cool. Nice. And what are they called so we can go and find them?
Good point.
I actually don't know if they're going to let me do this currently, but I want to call them, the plan is for them to be called It's In Your Nature to Destroy Yourselves, Parts 1 and 2. So I want to release them as a two-part thing. We're in the process of working out what that would look like. But it's my last two. It's a show I toured in 2016 and then one that I toured in 2019. And it's sort of the, like, it's the shows that I've done. It's the sort of my Brexit run. Of those two touring shows.
Awesome. I want to say all of your shows. I've probably seen almost all of your shows. I definitely saw It's In Your Nature to Destroy Yourselves.
Oh, thanks, Kate.
I saw it at the Hackney Empire, Hackney, and Sarah Barron was supporting you.
Yes, that's right. Yes, it was
awesome.
We did one of the shows that the bulk of the recording comes from was the night that we were supposed to leave. Like, it was March 28th, I think.
So
there was one on Friday and one on Monday, but it was that sort of weekend.
Oh, wow.
So it was like a weird, like, it's a weird weekend. It's like, it's a weird thing to listen back to because it sort of feels both dated. And then also there's like weird stuff that, because I had to listen to it to edit it. And it's really weird listening to yourself be wrong about things.
That's an incredible thing to have on record as well.
Yeah,
like, it's nice, that moment.
Nice document. Yeah, yeah.
I can't possibly imagine what that's like. Guys, I've got to wrap it up. So I just want to say, we've been Drunk Women Solving Crime. This is Men's Month, and we've had Nish Kumar. Thank you.
Thank you for having me. I had such a great time.
Drunk Women Solving Crime is produced by Amanda Redman with music by The Lion and the Wolf. You can follow us on Twitter at Drunk Women Pod and on Facebook and Instagram at Drunk Women Solving Crime. And please review us on Apple Podcasts. Also, if you've got a petty crime you want us to solve, then please write it in that review and we'll solve it. Thank you so much to Acast for hosting us, and thank you for listening.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.